This is Jim Alger, and this is Common Sense.
Oh, say can you see?
Change will not come if we wait for some other person.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Or if we wait for some other time.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
The airport experience is an abomination, and the airlines, for example, have capitalized on our fear and on our worries.
America comes in 37th in terms of the quality of care and its affordability.
I can't afford health care, you know, as it stands.
I just want to say Congressman King is an idiot.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us, Russia, and China. It's the EU.
I don't know why in the world we would have anybody like this as a congressman to make such a blatant, idiotic statement.
Oh, please, Mayor Antonio, please shut up. Don't say anything. Just be quiet.
The insurance industry has been accused of running a shadow campaign here, of pretending to cooperate on one hand and yet funding the kind of accusations that we hear coming up in the mainstream media while disavowing and washing their hands of it.
We're in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques. Can we just agree to call it torture? Welcome to Common Sense Radio on our new network, VBS Radio. Glad to see everyone here. We are going to start off today's show by introducing a few people who are going to be joining us on a regular basis. With us here today is Jency. Jency, say hi to everyone.
Hello. I was just having to tell my five-year-old to not run through the room. Anyway.
That's always fun.
I know.
And
your recording time is about to expire. Please finish your message within 8 seconds.
Wow. And Janie is with us on the phone. Janie,
hey, everybody.
And,
how's
of course,
it,
just, it would not
your
be
Your message
episode.
Has been sent.
It would not be an episode of Common Sense without some level of technical issue.
Exactly.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about several different issues. Over the past Christmas break, there were several attacks from Al-Qaeda on the United States, both in Afghanistan and here in the United States. We're going to be talking about that as well as the GOP response to that, which is quite curious to say the least. Dick Cheney and Rush Limbaugh both decided to run their uninformed mouths again. And we're also going to ask a question, which is, can we ever be 100% safe, or do we have to accept that these bad things will happen? We'll have a little bit of gossip from Hollywood, and we're also going to discuss goings-on on certain social networking sites. So right out of the gate, I want to start with I had the unfortunate issue of being hospitalized for the past several days, and I got to see our
Rush Limbaugh.
Yes, basically Rush Limbaugh. Ironically, I watched Rush go into the hospital. I did not laugh at him, however. I want to go on record as saying some of my fans wished him ill. I did not.
Yes, even.
And yet, I paid for it. Because I ended up in the hospital shortly thereafter. That's how I spent my New Year's. Upside,
you know what
is
they say about karma.
Yeah. The upside is I got my insurance deductible out of the way on January 1st, so beat that one. But Rush Limbaugh went to the hospital in Hawaii, and I wonder why everyone went to Hawaii. And I don't think Rush can really bash Barack for going to Hawaii if he's there too, but that's a whole other story. And while there, suffered chest pain, something I think we can all imagine Rush Limbaugh suffering, and was brought to the hospital. When released from the hospital, he made the statement that he was now more certain than ever that our healthcare system was just fine and that he received no special treatment at all, says the guy holding a press conference from his hospital with a doctor standing next to him.
Right.
Jency, help me out here. Where's the disconnect?
Well, when I watched his press conference, I made a note that he said at least two times at the very beginning that he was treated by people in the best healthcare system in the world. And the thing that I thought was unfortunate is that he used this opportunity instead of just, you know, talking about how he was grateful for the concern of his audience and, you know, giving a little, hey, if you got chest pains, go to the emergency room sort of thing. And he used it to make a political statement. And I found that very distasteful because, you know, he opens himself up then to people making political commentary about the fact that he had a heart attack in the first place. I don't know. It seemed a little bit wrong to me.
See, I don't know. I mean, I think that by making ridiculous statements as if, you know, to say that Rush Limbaugh, a guy with a radio audience that I can only dream to have, is somehow not being treated differently and has the same access to health care that you or I have is beyond ludicrous. And to pretend that that's the case is, I don't know, it defies logic to me. They just say things, and I've seen this, you know, I've seen this both the left and the right, where people just say things, and they figure if you just say it, it'll be so. The facts matter. Or maybe they don't.
Well, and he was saying that there was nothing wrong with the healthcare system in the United States based on his stay in the hospital. But I think he's
not
confusing.
Not for the Rush Limbaughs of the world, there's not.
Right. But he's confusing receiving good medical care with the healthcare system. And I think that's a big difference.
Deliberate inflation.
So being in the hospital, he's saying now, having been in the hospital and worn a gown open to the back, you know, for people to gawk at his, you know, hind end, means that then there's nothing wrong with the healthcare system, you know, mission accomplished, banner waving, is just absurd. I mean, he hasn't even received his bill yet. I mean,
well,
okay.
Well, it's not even
last,
that. It's
last
that he had access to the system. People don't even have access.
Right. Of course.
So to confuse this, to say that, hey, our healthcare system is broken, we're not saying our doctors are all walking around with their hands tied behind their back and they're retarded. We are saying that there are people that don't even have access to basic healthcare, and they are dying. There's a completely different argument going on here. And
there's a complete disconnect. Rush Limbaugh, who has all the resources that he could ever hope to have, and then your average Joe. It's like apples and oranges. I don't even know how he...
And to say that he's not treated differently when, you know, they close off a wing of the hotel to get you out of there in secret, undercover, and try to deny that you were ever even at the hotel. No, you're not being treated differently at all, Mr. Limbaugh. Me, on the other hand, I'm being, you know, drug out feet first, ambulance for all the world to see. So I don't know. I just find it so asinine. We've gotten to where facts don't seem to matter, and it's on the left and the right. But it's more on the right because they're the ones throwing stones right now. And it really does bug the hell out of me. I mean, I sat in a hospital for days, and I'm not going to say anything bad about the treatment I received. I received the best health care that I think I possibly could have. I don't think they could not have done another test on me. I had to get a test where they do a stress test on your heart. And because I was not in any condition to be able to run on a treadmill, they have to give you this medication that they claim makes you feel like you just, you know, ran a flight of stairs or so. Baloney. It makes you feel like you're about to die is what it does. But they put this radioactive stuff in you, and then they take these 360-degree pictures of your heart, and then they come out, and they give you the EKG, and then they, I mean, all this stuff, and that was just one battery of tests, not including all the other stuff that had to be done. And, you know, the irony is that the reason I ended up in the hospital the second time, because I was in twice, the reason I ended up in the hospital the second time was because I caught something the first time I went.
Nice.
So you kind of balance it off here, but I'll tell you one thing I did discover. This whole death with dignity thing, yeah, it's a garbage phrase. There's no dignity in death. There's none. And I was told by more than one doctor and a cardiologist that had I not gotten to the hospital pretty close to when I did, I would have died because I was losing too much fluids. And it's probably going to turn out that we lost Brittany Murphy from the same thing, just simply losing too much fluids and electrolytes getting too low and sudden cardiac arrest. The idea that, you know, someone like Brittany Murphy, if that's how it turns out, would be lost because of something that just a hospital stay could have done. Then extrapolate that to how many people don't even consider a hospital because they can't afford it at all. My stay was $400. That was my copay, $100. And I guarantee you my bill is well over $100,000. I guarantee you. I was in the telemetry ward of a hospital for 4 days, advanced life support for 1 day, emergency room, ambulance, oh, forget it. There's no way that it wasn't at least $100,000. And it is just amazing to me. First of all, it's too expensive. But I don't know if we get the best health care in the world here. And the reason I don't know that is because I haven't been to hospitals all over the world. I'm reminded of something that Lewis Black said once in one of his stand-up comedy specials when he said that he loves when people run around saying, this is the greatest country in the world, blah, blah, blah. And most people that say this have never left this country. How freaking stupid is that?
Well, I can tell you my sister-in-law and her husband and children, they live in the UK, and she's, you know, had two children over there, and she has had some issues with her pregnancies and had to be in the hospital, and she has said nothing but good things about the treatment and care that she's had, and she's an American citizen, so she's, you know.
Oh, okay, are you there? I'm not sure where she went.
Yeah, I lost her too.
Okay, she seems to have disappeared. We'll get her mic working here. We'll get her right back. What I think that the point that Jency was making is a really good one, that that the people who have access to the healthcare in the first place don't really complain about the care they receive. Am I wrong, Jency?
I just had to come back on the line. So you're saying the people that have access to the care usually don't complain about the care they receive?
The point that you were making is that regardless of where people are, it seems like if you have access to care,
right,
that's a whole different ballgame than if you don't have access to it.
You can always go to the ER, so we all have access to care.
We have access to emergency
right,
care.
Right, right. No, I know.
They won't even set your leg sometimes in the ER, depending on where you go. This is crazy.
I
want to come back to healthcare later on in the show because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this subject. We only have about 2 minutes or so before we go to break. But a lot of people have noticed that I've left Twitter and I dropped tens of thousands of followers on Twitter. And it was something I was planning on doing before the show, before we got back on the air. Anyway, it didn't make a lot of sense. I wasn't seeing a lot of return from it. The main thing was that it's too open. It's too uncontrolled. and you can never control what's going on. And I was getting drugged into these ridiculous fights with people over stupid things. And realistically speaking, it was two or three people who had 20 accounts who were making it look like the entire world's falling apart when, in fact, it really wasn't. And I was talking to Janie earlier, and we're watching other celebrities such as who was it now?
Kelsey Grammer.
Kelsey Grammer was attacked recently by
Miley Cyrus,
a female doctor.
It seems like Twitter, I don't know if it's jumped the shark just for me or jumped the shark in general, but it's too much of the inmates running the asylum. And
you can't defend yourself when you've got, you know, a couple of people just bombarding you with insults.
No, I mean, there's some idiot on there saying that I was hacking Huffington Post's account over the weekend while I was sitting in the telemetry ward of the hospital, and the Huffington Post thing ended up not even being the real Huffington Post account. And the truth be told, it probably was one of the individuals looking for attention. But
I was there watching it, and I noticed a couple of things that clued me into who I believe was behind it almost 100%.
Well,
Twitter
seems to have turned into a sandbox for children who want to play and not for people who really want to get involved and get things done. I would say
conservatives are really mobilizing themselves quite well using Twitter, you know, notwithstanding the people that like to attack the left,
the liberals
to attack the right. But within the conservative community themselves, they are very effective on Twitter. I'll have to give them little props, you know.
What's happening in the liberal community is that people are simply, everyone wants the king of their own domain. And so as soon as someone starts to get, oh, this person's got some credibility, another quote-unquote tribe will want to go tear them down. And when you've got people sitting on there under anonymous usernames, they don't mean anything. It doesn't make any sense. But we'll be back in 2 minutes.
I know that you know that I'm not telling the truth. I know that you know that they don't have any complaints or discussion. And learn how to bend your worst inhibitions and strike you out in the end.
The odds of having a boy who grows up loving baseball,
1 in 6,
which earns him a college scholarship,
1 in 2,500,
that gets him a contract in the minors,
1 in 3,700,
which leads to starting shortstop in the majors,
1 in 290,000.
The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism,
1 in 150. You know the odds. Now learn the signs. Go to AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Common sense economics rule number 8. A corporation that makes billions in profits should not stick taxpayers with the bill for their employee benefits. Walmart's record profits have made the Walton family the richest in America. But because they fail to offer affordable health coverage to 700,000 workers, taxpayers shell out billions for government care. Why should taxpayers bail out a corporation making record profits? Walmart can afford to be a better employer. Now would be a good time to start.
I was raised Irish Catholic. We had Jesus on one wall and JFK on the other. I've always had an impassioned love for this country, even when I disagree with it. So many people like to wrap themselves in the flag, forgetting what it stands for. That beacon of hope for people who had so little reason to hope. A people who believe that we could leave our children a world better than when we arrived. None of us are perfect, but politicians seem to have a knack for hypocrisy. It's because truth gets left behind when they arrive in Washington, choosing to win instead of doing the right thing. We've all seen the worst of our country. I would like to show my children the best. That's why I'm here.
Tune in to Common Sense with Jim Alger. www.getcommonsenseradio.com.
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio. 202-580-8514. 202-580-8514 from Washington, D.C., or really the entire eastern half of the United States. From the West Coast, you can reach us at 530-413-4511. 530-413-4511. And to make a hard transition here to real news, which is these terror attacks and attempted terror attack that took place over the Christmas break. And the one that I really want to talk about here is the airline one is one, and we'll get to that shortly. The one I want to talk about here is the one that's not getting a lot of play, and that is the attack on the CIA in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. When that story first went out, it went out that it was a bunch of CIA operatives. In fact, there was even some questions whether or not these are Blackwater people or something else. And as it turned out, it wasn't. As it's turned out, this was is a lot worse. It's catastrophic, is what it is, to the CIA. Al-Qaeda has pulled off a major, major hit here. Who they attacked were top-level, senior-level analysts of the Central Intelligence Agency, people whose names we'll never know. Mm-hmm. Mothers and fathers, one of them's a mom with three kids. And we'll never know them, but these are people who were led to a meeting by a person that they thought they had flipped. This person was, in fact, working for Al-Qaeda instead. They had set up a meeting with this person. They thought that this person had such great information that that they were trying to get the number two guy from Al-Qaeda, and that they thought that they had some great information. So they called in their senior people to come and meet with this person and get this information, and he blew them up. And our ability to hunt and find al-Zawahiri, and because that was a team that got hit, and bin Laden has been severely compromised now. This was, you know, it amazes me that we're dealing with an enemy who at one hand can pull off running a double agent on the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States, which is no easy feat. And simultaneously is trying to blow up their underwear on a Delta Airlines plane, which, if it wasn't so threatening, would be comical. And I just, I think it's, I wish that we would know their names, because this country owes some people a serious debt. This is a real war that we're going into over there, and the Yemen thing is not new. It's been going on for quite some time. Our first interaction that I'm aware of, and I could be wrong about this, with Al-Qaeda was actually in Somalia, and it was shown in the movie Black Hawk Down.
Actually, I'm
where
seeing
Al-Qaeda
two
attacked our military in Somalia.
Two names here that have been kind of have come out of casualties.
Of the seven mm-hmm. attack, I wouldn't put their names out there. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
I wish that we
you
did
can find
know
it
their
online.
Names. Yeah, but I'm just saying I'm not going to do that. I wish that we did know their names. I wish the country knew their names. I wish that we all could just tell their family thank you, because it really does make you take a step back. Our troops are out there every day. This is not a war that's going to be won on a battlefield. It's you know, as was said in the TV show The West Wing, this is going to be won by a busboy with a silencer. That this is a dirty, dirty war. And when we hear people talk about, you know, big militaries that are being brought down by little ragtag people, well, that's actually the way things work in the real world. I mean, a big organized military can never. You can never stop 100% of the people that want to attack you. You just can't do it, in my opinion. And so my question becomes, do we just accept it? Do we accept that, you know, hey, they're gonna get one through? If you throw enough stuff at us, and just because we don't hear about it every day doesn't mean they stop trying.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna get one through. Now, on the attack in Detroit, on the other hand, let's just be real and say that some people dropped the flipping ball. And, you know, we've got to go, talk, go after these people. secure our borders and secure our airliners. But at the same time, when you've got, I mean, I can ask the same question everyone's asked. How is it that a well-respected Nigerian says that my son holds ill wishes towards the United States, I believe he's being radicalized, they put him on a watch list but don't bother pulling his visa? I mean, how does that even happen? And the CIA, apparently, I think the CIA, it could be other intelligence agencies, so let's just say the intelligence community, processed that information. They put the dots together on December 26th, the day after the attack took place. And once again, it was airline passengers that thwarted the attack and his own incompetence. I don't know. But I'll tell you what really burns me here is that we are seeing the politicization of this in Dick Cheney's ridiculous comments, where he came out and he said that the president is acting as if we're not at war, weeks after the president just sent 30,000 more troops to war. The Republicans are putting forth this lie that Barack Obama never uses the word terrorism anymore. He uses it almost every week. Now, he doesn't beat his chest like a trained ape. He doesn't run around like a cowboy. But he does talk about it. We are aware of it. The President of the United States travels in a secure bubble, partially enhanced because of the terrorism threat. You can't talk to this guy and say he doesn't know that we're being threatened. And I'm just curious, Jancy, when did it become cool to suddenly say, hey, we're going to attack the commander-in-chief in a time of war, undermine him with our enemies in a time of war, just to win political points? When did the Republican Party stop choosing their party over their country?
Well, I was reading, interesting you should say that, I was reading an article online by Jonathan Alter in Newsweek, and he made an interesting statement. He said, there's nothing wrong with politicizing terrorism because in a democracy, essentially, he said everything should be open for debate. But, and this is, he was writing an article about Dick Cheney. He said, you know, he's accusing the president of not defending the country. And that is only emboldening our enemies. And it's one thing for you or I to, you know, make comments about the president that would be exactly the same as what Dick Cheney said. But what he's saying is giving, you know, fuel to our enemies, because he's not just a nobody. You know, we know when he speaks that he's a blowhard. You know, we know who he is. We just kind of roll our eyes. But they hear that and they think, you know, here's somebody that used to be the vice president, and he's saying the current president is soft on terrorism. He's, you know, this, that, and the other. And I think that is so out of line. And I'm just so tired of hearing the man speak. I can't stand it.
Well, I don't know. He is a dog whistle to the right wing. And, you know, you say it's one thing if we say something similar to that. Is it? Was it under the last administration? I seem to remember the Dixie Chicks tried to say something much, much less, and were run out of town on a rail. The right wing had their hair on fire. But now that it's not their guy there, all of a sudden, I don't know.
Well, and also,
beyond hypocrisy to me.
Right, and the thing about it, too, is Cheney had, you know, made this whole argument on the, you know, powers, presidential executive powers, that basically said, you know, if the president says we need to do it, then it's got to be legal to do.
I don't know. I'm so at a loss here. I'm so just absolutely beside myself that the Republican, it's not just the vice president. You then have congressmen and senators, you know, repeating the lies. And it's what we talked about on the show, you know, months ago, is that it's as if the GOP is hoping for a terrorist attack, because then they can jump. They've laid the groundwork down that he's not protecting, that the president's not protecting the country, knowing darn well the chances of some type of event occurring, successful or otherwise, in 4 years is pretty high. And so when it does, they can jump up and down and say, see, we told you, we told you, we told you, and Americans, being generally dumb voters, go right along with it. It floors me that they're not being called out. It floors me even more the Democratic Party is not calling them out for it much stronger than they have.
I think everybody's a little gun shy right now.
Why? That's what I don't understand. Why? I mean, we just had today a senator from, I believe, North Dakota, I'm trying to find his name right here, said that the Democratic senator who said that he's leaving the Senate next year, which now it's going to drop us from 60 down to 59. And we really weren't at 60 in the first place. Can you imagine where we're going to be if Republicans are able to successfully completely shut down the Senate by getting a couple of senators in there and do something crazy like take over the House by running this, it's Senator Dorgan, by running this this terror fear card. And I think part of what's happened here, back in 2004, the Democratic Party essentially ceded the election because we didn't take on the Bush administration on terror. We didn't say, hey, buddy, you were the one who was in office the day we were attacked. So what's the deal? You didn't protect us. You didn't connect the dots. You didn't do things. 3,000 people died on your watch. No one bothered to really call them out on that, and the Democrats got killed in 2004. It wasn't until 2006, we got far enough away from 9/11, that we were able to start getting some ground back. I think the Republicans are looking back at the 2004 election going, I don't want to be the Democrats in 2010. So let's just not, we're not going to give Barack Obama 1 inch on anything, even if it's the right thing to do. Even if it's best for the country or for their own constituency. And then they are going to just beat him over the head with this and fan the flames of the right way. And that's what's being told we're going for.
Yeah, you make your past your past. It's a brand new day. Sun is shining. It's a brand new day. For the first time in such a long time.
The right-wing extremist Republican base is back. They lost the election. They lost on the Recovery Act, the budget, and children's health care. They've lost the confidence of the American people after 8 years of failed policies that ruined our economy and cost millions of jobs. Now, desperate Republicans and their well-funded allies are organizing angry mobs, just like they did during the election. Their goal? Destroy President Obama and stop the change Americans voted for overwhelmingly in November.
It will break him.
I hope he fails.
This mob activity is straight from the playbook of high-level Republican political operatives. They have no plan for moving our country forward, so they've called out the mob.
And I want to know, why are you people ignoring his struggle?
Call the Republican Party. Tell them you've had enough of the mob.
The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Common Sense Economics Rule Number 11. If a corporation makes record profits in this economy, they can afford to offer basic health coverage to their employees. Walmart makes $25,000 in profit every minute. Gave their CEO an $8 million bonus, but still refuses to offer affordable health coverage to 700,000 employees, nearly half their workforce. America's largest corporation can afford to be a better employer. Now would be a good time to start.
Welcome back to Common Sense Radio, 202-580-8514, 202-580-8514 from Washington, D.C., or really the entire eastern half of the United States. From the West Coast, you can reach us at 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511. And before we got thrown into break there, we were talking about how the GOP seems content to politicize the terror attacks. And I keep going back and I'm at a loss because I am really just utterly flabbergasted at how there's a completely different set of rules for the GOP versus the Democratic Party, depending on the election year. And most importantly, who's in office. And I'm wondering, you know, when we look at the polling, the president's numbers are down a little bit, not too ridiculous. But they have been chiseled down somewhat. So the Republicans say, hey, this is working, let's keep doing it. On a political standpoint, it makes perfect sense. But on a patriotic standpoint, it doesn't make any sense at all. And so when you look at the Republicans are now lining themselves squarely behind Al-Qaeda. And that just seems kind of strange to me, Jensie.
Well, it seems like we're in the exact same position that the GOP was saying the exact same, or saying the exact same thing that the left was doing this during, you know, the Bush years, that they were aligning themselves with our enemies. I mean, it's just so disgusting to see it back and forth, and they think we're stupid. I mean, we pay attention.
Well, the thing is, do we pay attention?
Well, collectively, I don't think so, but some of us do. I mean, you can do a Google search to find their statements from previous years. So, you know, thank goodness for Al Gore and the interwebs, you know.
But the thing is, that's my thing. If you look at previous years, it looks like this kind of nonsense has worked before. And that's what really bothers me. I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
It's politics.
Yeah, but this is my point. And this is my real big point, is when the politics is taking precedence over the country, safety, security, best interests, you know, this is what's wrong with politics. No one gets into politics for these reasons. They don't do it to do this. I just don't get it.
Well, you know, in terms of patriotism, though, I think, Jim, you've got to admit that the right, we've got a lock on patriotic fashion. Because you go to any conservative or whatnot rally, and half the crowd there will be wearing a button-up shirt that's got the flag all over it. But if you go to a liberal, lefty, you know, rally about something, they might be waving the flag, but they are not wearing the flag. And I think that, you know, that might be, you know, there might be something to that.
Well, I think there might be a point there. I don't know if that's true, though. I think that the... I got to think of it now because you kind of threw me a curveball. I've been to many
Democratic politics of fashion.
The politics of fashion.
What were people wearing? You know, I'm talking about the long sleeve kind of like
Democrats
shirt.
Would rather take care of Americans. I mean, there's a difference between just saying you're doing something and wrapping yourself up in the flag, and then actually doing it.
Well, I guess, you know, we did have the flag pin gate or whatever, you know, during the campaign.
Another joke. I just don't get it. I don't get how the Republicans can be allowed to get away with this.
Well, who's letting them get away with it?
Well, the Democrats, because they're freaking gutless and spineless and it drives me up the wall. I mean, this is why the Democrats are going to lose congressional seats this year, because the Democratic base is, okay, we won. We can go, you know, back and chill out for now. We don't have to worry about it anymore, whereas the Republicans are motivated to get back into office and stop the mean, evil, liberal, democratic, you know.
Socialist
agenda, exactly.
Yeah.
So I...
And meanwhile, there are so many of us out there, because I've talked to them on Twitter and Facebook, people on both sides that are just as fed up, you know, not going to take it anymore, that want to just get things done. They don't want to be involved in this back and forth political banter. They just want to say, hey, we have enough intelligence collectively in this United States of America to solve a lot of issues if we just would quit the partisanship, would just talk about collective goals and visions and just do stuff. I mean, just stop talking and do stuff. I really want a third party, and I will be I'll happily run for president of that. Sergeant at arms, maybe. We'll be meeting in a clubhouse behind my home here, probably, the likelihood of it.
Well,
but there's a lot of people tired, Jim, and you know that, on both sides, that are just so sick.
Yeah, I think, of course they're sick, but they people are tired of government,
right.
And they're also tired of, you know, the perception of being taxed to death and my money's not going where I want. These are easy, vague. This is like going to a psychic. I mean, you know, are you mad at government? Yes. Well, it's his fault. Well, you know, when you have a large chunk of the country blaming Barack Obama for our economy, I wonder if they'll blame him for the economy as we continue to recover. When, you know, Bloomberg News put out today that we're not going to be in a jobless recovery much longer. It looks like, and I hope I'm not spooking this here, but it looks like the number's going to come back in on this Friday, and then they're starting to swing. And that's in line with what we've seen.
Well, I can tell you from my own business, because the company that I own, we sell to large manufacturers across the United States, and I saw an article today that factory orders have picked up, or picking up, for materials, and I can attest to that. We are having, you know, a huge uptick in sales right now. And I don't know if it's people just spending, you know, from the first part of their budgets already, but we're doing good. We did good last year, though, you know, but it looks really good right now. We're just a couple days into the year.
And will Barack Obama get any credit for this? I mean, one of the problems that we have, is, and the CIA is seeing this firsthand, is you don't get credit for things that don't happen when you should. Top economists believe that the actions that Barack Obama took prevented this country from going into a deep depression. Forget recession, we're talking depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so he stepped up, did what he had to do, whether it was popular or not. And the GOP, not one single vote, not one vote for it. And yet they took credit for the stimulus money that went to their districts.
Oh, yes.
I mean, these guys have no shame at all, and the voters are dumb enough to buy it. To me, it just makes no sense. I don't get it. I don't understand, you know, what it's going to take to get people to see what's really going on. It's not really a Democrat or Republican thing.
Mm-mm.
It's more of just a human thing. I mean, I watched it firsthand. I watched, you know, people say things that were provably false. You could say, hey, that's not true. Look at this. This is the truth. Here it is. And they don't care. They want to believe what they want to believe. They want to see what they want to see, both good and bad. And I don't know if, you know, when we start, when is it going to be that we're going to start paying attention to taking care of things? I don't know.
Well, it's got to start locally, because the local leaders are doing the exact same thing on a smaller basis, and you can really affect change. We've got school board elections coming up in our community, and those are, you know, they don't have to run against everybody in the whole city. It's by neighborhoods. You can really get involved in that. And let me tell you, our school system here is terrible. So,
and no one,
you know,
does.
No, they don't. You know, who wants to fool with it? Who wants to go to the city council meetings? You know, who wants to read the minutes of what they're doing? You know, who wants to talk about those things? But guess what? When they start raising your water rates or raising your property taxes, that's where it's going to start. And, you know,
then people who didn't show up will complain.
Right. Because, see, the federal government might not raise our taxes and might be able to say, you know, we're not raising your taxes. But then you've got the state governments that are in terrible shape because they're not being managed properly. So the state governments are going to raise our taxes. Well, during all the fat years, the local governments were adding positions, adding programs, you know, all of this sort of thing. And now that they can't afford them, it's like, well, you don't want to pull the plug on grandma, so to speak, when you're talking about some kind of city beautification program or,
well, this,
you know,
healthcare thing is a great thing for people to get involved in. And we're going to be re-airing a special comment that I had made in a previous show about what we're really talking about here. And it's time to get involved in this. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Why would politicians like Bart Stupak introduce abortion into America's healthcare debate? Why are they trying to make it more difficult than ever before for women to buy insurance coverage for abortion in the new healthcare system? Even if they use their own money? Why? Because they want to impose one of the worst restrictions on a woman's right to choose in a generation. Go to ProChoiceAmerica.org today and call on your member of Congress to say no to anti-choice, anti-healthcare attacks.
I was raised Irish Catholic. We had Jesus on one wall and JFK on the other. I've always had an impassioned love for this country, even when I disagree with it. So many people like to wrap themselves in the flag, forgetting what it stands for. That beacon of hope for people who had so little reason to hope. A people who believe that we could leave our children a world better than when we arrived. None of us are perfect, but politicians seem to have a knack for hypocrisy. It's because truth gets left behind when they arrive in Washington, choosing to win instead of doing the right thing. We've all seen the worst of our country. I would like to show my children the best. That's why I'm here. Tune in to Common Sense with Jim Alger. www.getcommonsenseradio.com. I was raised Irish Catholic. We had Jesus on one wall and JFK on the other. I've always had an impassioned love for this country, even when I disagree with it. So many people like to wrap themselves in the flag, forgetting what it stands for. That beacon of hope for a people who had so little reason to hope. A people who believe that we could leave our children a world better than when we arrived. None of us are perfect, but politicians seem to have a knack for hypocrisy. It's because truth gets left behind when they arrive in Washington, choosing to win instead of doing the right thing. We've all seen the worst of our country. I would like to show my children the best. That's why I'm here. Tune in to Common Sense with Jim Alger. www.getcommonsenseradio.com. I beseech you, in the bowels of Christ, think it possible you may be mistaken. So wrote Oliver Cromwell in 1660, but those words could easily apply nearly 350 years later. As we are watching our country split down ideological lines for the first time in my lifetime, I am truly fearful that we are going down a path from which we may not be readily able to return. An ideologically driven debate has punted the ball of environmental responsibility so far downfield that scientists believe we are on the cusp of passing the point of no return, while others believe we may have already passed it. It is what happens when ideology guides us over reason and common sense, and the result is catastrophic. For the first time in history, our children's life expectancy is less than our own. The threat of ideology was virtually foretold by Thomas Jefferson in an 1822 letter to James Smith, when he said, quote, "Man, once surrendering his reason, has no remaining guard against absurdities the most monstrous, and like a ship without a rudder, is a sport of every wind," unquote. In recent years, we have witnessed the suspension of reason in favor of ideology at almost every turn. A tolerant left has stood by when the right told us to suspend reason for faith that dinosaurs roamed the earth with humans. While they knew this with the same certitude that others before them knew the world was flat, we knew better, and did our best to prevent that talk from being given credence in a science class, much as we wouldn't allow a health class to be sponsored by Philip Morris. But overall, the right's ideology wasn't hurting us. A tolerant left stood by when the right asked the United States Congress to suspend the reason of medical doctors for the certitude of faith that Terri Schiavo wasn't really brain dead. We knew better, and when she died, no autopsy proved that the doctors were correct. This, of course, didn't matter to the right wing, because they had surrendered reason. I am not sure if it was Roe v. Wade, the Reagan Revolution, Terri Schiavo, stem cell research, or torture, but somewhere along the way, the train has jumped the tracks. The ideological right left the path of your standard self-righteous indignation and began spewing out hatred and lies for the purpose of political gain. It really blew onto the scene as this nation was supposedly closing the ugly book of racism by electing the first African-American president. Like a cancer on the fabric of our nation, it is multiplying at an alarming rate, which poses the immediate question, what are we prepared to do about it? This is no longer about a woman's right to choose or an accident victim in Florida. It isn't about a birth certificate or socialism. It is about the most fundamental of our rights, life. Whether you believe life is a divine gift or a genetic mutation in the evolutionary chain, surely you can agree at a minimum that life has with it an intrinsic value to those who hold it. When 18,000 Americans are allowed to die each year because they lack health care, we as a nation must respond, if not out of the gentle calling of God, then out of the screaming of humanity. This time last year, I was preparing to lay my adoptive father to rest at Woodlawn Cemetery in New York City, returning him home to his family, friends, and his God. You've heard me speak of my father as both biological and adopted. My biological father had passed away 6 months earlier. As a federal employee, he had very good health care. Not great, but very good. When he passed away, he was buried with honors at Arlington National Cemetery, a soldier, a hero, and a patriot. Any doubts where my love for this country or my deep conviction in the principles it attempts to uphold comes from were shed one spring morning under 21 guns. But that was a few months ago, and an unbelievable twist of fate. The man who chose to be my father was now completing his journey on this earth. His path in life was much different. Unlike my biological father, a disability prevented him from serving in the war. There would be no 21 guns for him. There would also be no government health care. There was a time not long ago that health care wasn't something we worried about, but as my father moved on in years, he would fall more frequently, and the reality of the health care debate that had been in the abstract would soon come to my home. It was a Sunday morning when I walked into the house to see my father lying on the floor. He had just returned from church and tripped in the living room. My instinct was to call 911 when I heard my mother tell me to stop. "I can't afford the ambulance copay. Can we get him in the car?" she asked. In one sentence, the reality of what was happening hit home. My father's last years would bankrupt him. The dream he had of leaving an estate to his wife of 43 years had vanished with his diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. This is a reality being played out in homes across this country as we speak. As those of you who have heard me speak of my father before know, he finally succumbed to his illness when, after failing to eat for nearly 10 days, he had a heart attack, fell into a coma, and died. We had a meeting with my father's doctor in a hallway at an emergency room, where, under relatively urgent circumstances, the decision to honor his wishes and send him home to die was made. not by some government official or even a doctor, but by my mother and I. As I said earlier, the most painful thing I've ever done in my life was nothing. I don't know that the decision would have been any easier in a doctor's office a few months earlier, but it would have not felt so rushed. It would have been emotional for sure, but thought out. Thanks to Sarah Palin's claim of death panels, you will never know, for Congress has now removed the provision that would have authorized such a visit between you, your loved one, and your doctor to be paid for by insurance. It is no longer about right or wrong. It is about winning. And now, there are already casualties. For those of you who legitimately believe this is about socialism, death panels, or government takeovers, in the words of Oliver Cromwell, I beseech you in the bowels of Christ, think it possible that you may be mistaken. For those of you who know better, but are knowingly manipulating the vulnerable just to score a win at any cost, go to hell. For the rest of us who silently sit by while these thugs take over town hall meetings, threaten the life of not just the President of the United States, but his wife and children as well, or allow this debate to be hijacked by those who don't give a damn about this country or her people, it is time to rise up. Our fathers may not have had the health care they deserve, but our children most certainly can. This show is dedicated to the memory of those that have fallen while this debate has raged, and those that are continuing to fall every single day for the lack of health care. These people are not paying a price that is money. They are paying with their lives. They are our friends, our neighbors, our family. We cannot continue to let this happen. I don't know what's right or what's wrong sometimes. What I do know is that 18,000 people a year dying because they can't afford health care in the richest country in the world is dead wrong. And it's time for us to be motivated enough to do something about it. Don't be afraid. Stand up for what you believe in. Stand up for your fellow man. Write your congressman. Call your congressman. Write your senators. Call your senators. Call your friends. Call your neighbors. Mobilize. If there's a meeting there, go. Do not be afraid. Do not fear. That is what they want you to do. We must stand up and rise up and get this done for the sake of our children. Let our children not fall the same fate as our parents. This has been Common Sense. On behalf of Janie, Jensie, Natalie, Chris, Mike, myself, and the entire Common Sense crew, thank you for joining us. Common Sense airs live every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, with the internet feed stream beginning 5 minutes earlier, courtesy of BBS Radio. Episodes are available on demand via iTunes. For further information, visit the show's webpage at www.getcommonsenseradio.com. The Common Sense Radio Show would like to send a very special thank you to our engineer, Seth Hendrick, as well as our musical composer, Stephen Glossner. Until next week, stay safe, keep your head held high, and remember to always replace the spin with common sense. Take them home, Steve.